Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of Knuckles and Gloves, of course, the Fight City, Hannibal Boxing, a couple other places. More importantly, in just a moment, my buddy Bryn Jonathan Butler is going to be with us. We got some boxing to talk about this weekend. We got Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Danny Jacobs coming up. Last weekend, we had Juan Francisco Estrada versus Srisaket Sorungvisai, the second fight between them. Got to talk about that a little bit. Got to talk about this entire movement with DAZN and the apps. Haven't been on in a little while. Apologize for that, but got a lot of things to catch up on. There's boxing going on, people. So we got to talk, man. We got to talk. Thank you so much for tuning in, by the way. Like I said, we haven't been on in a while, so we appreciate that. Big fight this weekend. It kind of remains to be seen how big. Kind of remains to be seen how competitive as well. Personally, I believe it will be competitive, but I'm curious to see what Bryn has to say about it. I think this is a kind of intriguing fight in a number of different ways. First off, I think that it's an intriguing fight because it's two upper echelon middleweights. It's two of the best middleweights in the world. It's kind of mincing words a little bit to call them upper echelon middleweights or something like that. It's two of the best middleweights in the world and definitely two of the best fighters in the world. And I think that pairing them up, this is the kind of thing that I talk about fairly regularly when we do have shows. While I do want to praise Saul Alvarez for taking a fight like this, while I do want to praise Danny Jacobs for getting in with Saul Alvarez, and while I definitely don't want to discourage these kinds of fights from happening, and I don't want to discourage people from making these kinds of fights by just complaining about them, that being said, it's totally worth mentioning and fair to mention that these kinds of fights, these fights where a pound-for-pound level talent, however you want to describe Canelo Alvarez, but he is a pound-for-pound level talent. He is definitely one of the best fighters in the world, and one of the best fighters in the world fighting one of his top contenders. There's nothing weird about that. That's something that should happen all the time, and so treating it as if it's some sort of Super Bowl or something like that is part of what's wrong with boxing, but we'll get back to that in a moment. Bryn, what up, dude?
Hey, Patrick. It's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. It has been a little while. I apologize, and thanks for bearing with us.
Yeah. No, there's some interesting fights to look ahead to, and controversy in boxing with the Big Baby fiasco, and then Amir Khan, I guess we should reflect on that lovely performance that he put up.
Yes. Well, especially because we did a kind of an Amir Khan show a couple weeks ago. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there was anything wrong with doing an Amir Khan show. And I don't think anything that happened since then has, soured us on it or anything like that. It's boxing, but yeah, we haven't been on for a minute. So we do need to talk about that shit. Fuck it. Let's just start out with that stuff right there. We had Terrence Crawford taking on Amir Khan. I think that you and I had both pretty much agreed that, it was just a situation where obviously Terrence Crawford is, if not the best fighter on the planet right now, in terms of boxing anyway, if he's not the best fighter on the planet, he's certainly among them. He's among the top few. And then we have a guy like Amir Khan, very exciting, often in good fights, kind of the type of fighter you want to watch more often than not. But at the same time, we knew that he just didn't really have much of a chance going into this fight. And then there we have the controversy at the end of that fight where it was just, it was a combination of a number of things. It was a combination of kind of being a letdown. And if you were like an Amir Khan fan and saying, nope, he's going to go out on a shield. And then it's also kind of a kick to the balls in the sense of you're a boxing fan and here's a big fight that's like on pay-per-view and all this kinds of thing, and it's like $70 and some shit. And then here we have the main event, which is, it's going fine. I mean, it was a domination as many people expected, but then it ends and it's like everybody's looking around like, fuck just happened. What do we do? Where am I? Who is this? It's like, dude, you guys, $70. People pay fucking $70 to see these officials looking around like, where are we? Like, come on, guys. Come on.
It was a terrible look. And, I mean, what you left out is to see the replay of the quote-unquote low blow look. I mean, unless Khan's balls are, you know, just an unbelievable size, that looked like the upper thigh. I mean, who knows? And good for him or good for his wife or whatever. But for the vast majority of the population, that's the upper thigh. That's not even the cup. And I have some hesitation saying it because Khan has zero reputation for quitting big fights. If anybody's willing to go out on their shield, it's him. It's what he's most known for, is going out on his shield, most notably against Canelo. Vastly overmatched, way too small, and he went in there to win that fight. He was winning rounds, and he took a huge risk, and you have to give him credit for all that. And then the fight like this, where he's forced to defend, you know, we have instant replays. I don't understand how that's a low blow. My feeling watching that fight, Patrick, was just a clear sense with Terence Crawford that I was seeing the best fighter in the world. I've been at ringside for a number of Lomachenko's fights. I think the world of his talent, but I had no sense that there's any discussion, at least in the jury of my own mind, that what you're seeing with Crawford is unique. I'm not saying there aren't technical debates about where he stands versus Lomachenko, but just on balance as a fighter, I had this visceral sensation that I was seeing the best the world has to offer. He's just an awesome talent. And I think one of the things we talked about in regard to him and that we've come back to is he capable of still improving? That was the big question mark. I asked him directly in regard to the Khan fight when they announced the fight here in New York. And he was very angry at me to say the only person that you really had trouble with was Gamboa. And the reasons that you had trouble, it seems to me that Khan could present a bigger challenge. He arguably is faster than Gamboa, longer, taller, more powerful. So, I mean, is there a blueprint there that Khan can sort of use to guide himself to, you know, the kind of surprising performance he put on against Canelo until he was knocked unconscious? And Crawford just said, like, I was a different fighter back then. You know, I think that's a ridiculous question because I'm not the same guy who fought Gamboa, and I think he absolutely underlined that with what we saw against Khan. I mean, he just dismantled Khan. I don't think I've ever really seen Khan outboxed like that before, not just, you know, the firepower that Crawford has, but just the cruelty that Crawford has is just such an awesome spectacle to see. Like, it reminds me of, you know, some of the fights with Hagler where he just wants to prove something and he seems to enjoy doing it. He enjoys humiliating these guys. And it's just very, very special to watch. So the ending was very disappointing. I didn't feel the impact of that blow in the vicinity of the groin, but it didn't look like a groin shot to me. So Khan leaves with his reputation, I think, not in tatters, but it injures it. It injures his legacy. But then again, he's never done it before, so maybe he gets, you know, a bit of a mulligan. I don't know. But it was very disappointing to watch, and yet Crawford, I just would love to see him have the ability to fight the top people out there because, you know, he's just extraordinarily special. And I think he's improving with each fight, which is a scary, scary thought because he's at a very rare level. I think, you know, I think one of the most talented boxers we've seen in a generation.
Yeah, like I said, there's no question that he's one of the best few fighters in the world. And I think that, you would probably expect that one of the best few fighters in the world, barring some sort of you know, weird size disparity or something like that, should take care of a guy like Amir Khan. Look, I mean, you know, pulling back a little bit, you know, stepping back and saying, all right, what was this fight? Like, what did this fight do? I don't want to be negative because I like Terrence Crawford a lot. I do. I personally think that he would defeat Errol Spence, and I personally think that he probably is the best fighter around. But, you know, I mean, you have Amir Khan, who hasn't fought since 2018, and he hasn't fought since September of 2018, and that fight was against Samuel Vargas. And on top of that, Khan was wobbled, hurt, and put down. And then his most recent fight before that was Phil LaGreco, and then he hadn't fought in almost 2 years. So we're talking about a guy who wasn't particularly relevant in terms of what he meant to his division. And then you have Terrence Crawford, who has been criticized before for being somewhat inactive, not staying in the spotlight quite enough considering his talent. And indeed, you look back and you see that since 2017, he's fighting twice a year. You know, and that's not unique. Most fighters toward the top of the game are fighting about twice a year. And this has been going on with him since like 2015 or something like that. So it's not like that's new. But again, you know, when you're fighting twice a year, and this is something that we've talked about, you and I, on the show endlessly, you're fighting twice a year, at least one of those fights needs to be really big, and the other one shouldn't be shit, or at least it shouldn't be an expected mismatch. And that's pretty much what this was. And then on top of that, you get the guy not really able to finish the fight or not able to put, you know, close the show, as it were. And not his fault that Amir Khan chose to bow out, and also not that I blame Amir Khan for bowing out, but it was just kind of a perfect storm of meh, a perfect storm of just like, fuck, man. You know, you looked so fantastic against Julius Ndongo and totally unified the 140-pound title. And while I respect doing that and stepping up and challenging yourself, I do think that more emphasis in general should be placed on sticking around and dominating a division in boxing. That said, you know, he moved up, looked good. Jeff Horn fight, totally understand. That was kind of like some business that needed to be taken care of. Jeff Horn was talking shit, need to put him away. I get it. Mm-hmm. Jose Benavidez Jr., also a good fight. But, you know, lingering over there in the wings is that the Errol Spence fight is not happening. And in the wake of the Amir Khan fight, it doesn't sound like it's any more likely to happen. And that's the ultimate frustration, is that all of this, the time wasted on the Amir Khan fight, was wasted. It's 6 months down the drain, and then we're not really on top of that getting anything from it. It's highly symptomatic of the what's wrong with boxing.
I totally agree that it's emblematic, and I mean, we're going to get into that with, I mean, Jesus Christ, who Joshua got as a substitute for already somebody that nobody was petitioning to watch Big Baby Miller fight Joshua. And now we're talking about 2021 as the most likely date, where if these guys are able to get through, you know, relatively dangerous fights because they're vulnerable, then we get Wilder Joshua. I agree with you in regard to Spence and Crawford. And I think another big issue is the fact that Crawford is not – demonstrated himself to be a marketable fighter outside of Omaha. It's an issue with him, despite his talent, despite, you know, some impressive victories and that kind of thing. And I agree. I mean, Khan has been away. He's shown vulnerabilities. I mean, this was sort of an opportunity for Crawford to, you know, like a star player playing against a shitty team, just to dunk on somebody and try to create an impressive meme or highlight or that kind of thing, like to whet, you know, just to excite his audience and to ideally plant seeds in new spectators who are not ingratiated to really wanting to spend money on him. Here they spent $70 on something where they feel completely ripped off, and I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be challenging for Crawford to not have a name that he's fighting outside of what he's established in Omaha. I think he's not somebody selling a lot of tickets, and boxing is getting less and less people who are able to sell tickets. You know, it's becoming fewer and fewer people, you know, like the music industry or publishing, that kind of thing, where it's not a healthy industry overall. And this inflated pay rate that a lot of boxers have enjoyed, once there's a market correction and they're being paid commensurate with the kind of audiences that they can generate, I'm not sure where boxing stands at that point, because a lot of these guys are, you know, Danny Garcia, for example, fighting fucking nobodies and making seven figures. That's not going to happen because he's not selling tickets. And I think Crawford is going to run into some real problems, and you're going to see egos get humbled by the economic reality that they're not selling tickets. They're not, and I'm not saying he's not fighting in a fan-friendly style, but I'm hoping that people are going to get pissed off enough that the fights that they want to see are not happening, and the fights that are defining boxing are the ones that are not being made by the people with this massive influx of money, and who knows how long that's going to last. Al Haymon, for as brilliant as everybody was talking about him to be, give him $300, $400 million, what was accomplished with that money? You know, not a hell of a lot for his brand, other than a lot of fighters who are going to go on with their careers without being overpaid, wondering like, oh, you mean I have to fight the big names that are out there? And the promoters are not making that happen. So it's very frustrating that the people we have out there, including, you know, three heavyweights with a claim on being the linear or having a piece of the heavyweight title, who are nowhere close to fighting again in the next, what, 12, 18 months? I mean, it's a bad, bad look right now.
It is. It's a terrible look. And, you know, I'm definitely not, like, there are hashtag levels to the PBC acceptance or hatred here, obviously, you know. I'm not all the way on to the right, where I'm constantly pissing on Premier Boxing champions and laughing at their failures and stuff like that. And I'm not all the way to the left either, where I'm rooting them on. I want boxing to do well. I want the fighters to do well. You know, I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for the sport and the fighters. I'm not rooting for promoters or channels or anything like that. I don't care about that. But that being said, nobody's getting into this fucking business out of the goodness of their heart. This is boxing, dude. You know, like, I know enough of the history of boxing. I don't know everything, but I know enough of it to know that that's what the sport was formed for. To make money off of the fighters, basically. You know, like, this is what it was, you know, or to, more succinctly, to capitalize off of the human, you know, need for just watching people fucking be violent. But regardless, the point is that how that applies to PBC is that, you know, there's going to be boxing either way. All of this stuff is going to happen either way. But the grift, how long can the grift go on? This particular grift, you know, where these fighters are getting way overpaid, you know, not really fighting very often. Everything's happening in-house. And, you know, there's not really any clear progress being made for a vast majority of the fighters. Like, how long can that go on? How long can fans be okay with it? How long can that money keep coming in? So one of these things is going to give. Something's going to happen. When it is, I don't know. You know, and I remember a couple of years ago, and I've mentioned this before, Nicole Duva was on the show when Foley and I had the show, and you know, she had basically said more or less that Al Haymon was getting into the business in a way that was completely beneficial to him and to his fighters, and that basically the aim was to fuck everybody else over. Like, not only to the aim wasn't just to do well for himself, but like a scorched earth tactic, as it were. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, does that seem like she kind of called it? In a way. Because a lot of the stuff that's happened business-wise has been super funky. And the way everybody is just kind of pointed at each other. and the factions have like worked together, but not really gotten any. Like there are still walls up, and it's lame. And this the Crawford Spence situation, the Wilder Joshua situations. Those two are the two biggest in boxing right now, and they just happen to highlight that issue.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think where Andre Ward had an opportunity to emerge to, as an underdog when he entered that World Series, I think we need a lot more of that model. We are the only sport, this is often said, where our most prized fights are really shown to the most limited audience. You know, we limit our audience and we set up this paywall that, the Super Bowl, the Kentucky Derby, NBA playoffs, baseball playoffs, the World Cup with soccer, we're restricting this. And very few people make an unbelievable amount of money, but I think it's always been shown to be a great product. It doesn't cost that much to produce it relative to other sports. And it seems like this proverbial 3-4 people who are bald arguing over a comb about how to make it work. And it's just embarrassing. And the only fights that really get major attention, boxing used to not even be on the sports pages. It was on the front page. It was that big. It was the major sport. And I just think the way what's dominating boxing, as I mentioned before, in terms of the fights that are not made is just, you have criminals jousting with Harvard MBAs. And I think there's equal intelligence on all sides. There's no barrier to entry to this game. But, I mean, they are lining their own pockets. They've helped some of the fighters, as Heyman has done. Heyman is very popular amongst fighters. But, I mean, I think if we were able to see how the sausage was made in terms of what his model is the health of the sport even on the top seven, like his list of what he's trying to accomplish with this massive amounts of venture capital that he's burned through? I doubt it. Does Aram particularly care about his legacy or Eddie Hearn? We're just not seeing evidence of it in terms of the major fights that would, I think, really increase the profile of the sport and rejuvenate its overall health with casual fans. And that's not paramount on the agenda is, yeah, it's embarrassing and it's just very frustrating. And I don't really know what maneuvers can be done to sort of assist and fuel things like those tournaments that are occasionally bumping into certain divisions that are not particularly high profile divisions. But I mean, why the fuck aren't we seeing a tremendous opportunity with three undefeated heavyweight champions? Why aren't we seeing them regularly fighting each other to see like the coronation of the one guy emerging, or to see them all beat the fuck out of each other? And it's just sort of like the 90s used to be, where you had a great crop of heavyweights and there were really surprising results that I think created a tremendous amount of excitement in terms of Ike Biabucci, Tommy Morrison, Ray Mercer, Lennox Lewis, Michael Bent shocking Morrison, Tyson, Bo, Holyfield. I mean, we don't have that kind of crop, but we've got three guys where they're really interesting combinations in whatever iteration you combine them in. I'd love to see them all have trilogies, and I don't know how they would go. They've all shown vulnerabilities, and they've all got their own strengths. And as everything that I'm reading tells me that nothing is going to happen with them until at least 2021. That's just crazy to me, the amounts of money that are being thrown at them. And we're no closer to having any of it happen. I mean, the kind of money that Wilder just turned down, incredible.
It's pretty insane, man. Like I said, something's going to give. It's not going to – there's no way that kind of money can be left on the table. And, I mean, it's just – I from a business standpoint, I get it. You know, I understand it makes – if you are a manager, if you are a promoter, if you're somebody on that side, it makes more sense for you to risk less and make almost as much than for you to just risk everything and potentially make a shitload, but then nothing. Like, I get it. You know, it's a far smarter investment to play the game. But, man, it's frustrating. And I do have to point out, though, just historically, it gets super tiresome, whether it's on the Boxing History account or just kind of looking around. It gets super tiresome hearing people and reading people say things along the lines of, this is nothing like the 1970s, or this is nothing like the 1950s, or look, dude, people have been saying that. In the 1970s, they were saying this is nothing like the 1920s, and in the 1920s, they were like, this is nothing like the 1890s. Like, literally,
correct.
This has been the case. This has always been the case. So, in any event, the complaints, while valid, are not new at all. But, you know, they are super frustrating.
It's funny that we have to keep pointing that out. I was watching one of my favorite films, Vertigo, and it's funny at the beginning of that, because I was just in San Francisco last week, and Vertigo is like 1952, and at the beginning of the film, you have a guy saying, I just don't recognize San Francisco anymore. It's just such a different place than the one I grew up in. It's like 67 years later, you know, that's all people are talking about. Oh God, Silicon Valley. But I think you're absolutely right. Every generation gets an opportunity to say this and say that their music is better than their parents or than not their parents, but their kids have. It's just part of the way nostalgia functions.
It's a natural, you know, it's going to happen. Our good buddy, fucking what's his name, Gary Busey, had a great denture mouthed quote about changes on his Celebrity Rehab appearance with Dr. Drew on VH1 years ago. I don't even remember what it was. I just remember him slurring something about nothing changes but the changes. It's true. Change is guaranteed, people. Tax and change and death or something like that. Point is, people are always going to be whining about how things never, you know, never are the way that they were. And boxing is no exception to that, clearly.
Well, and let's not leave out that Gary Busey is a tireless champion for not having to wear a helmet on a motorcycle, despite the fact that he's had massive injuries as a result of automotive accidents. So, you know, he's the Rosa Parks of that particular campaign. Good for him.
Yeah, he went from looking like Gary Busey to looking like fucking Gary Busey. I mean,
yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gary Busey.
Well, you know, him and Bobby Chez can join their campaign.
I was waiting for the Bobby Chez name drop. I was waiting for it.
Blame Bobby.
So we had we had Crawford Con from a couple of weeks ago. Well, something you had said that I'd forgotten to mention or I'd forgotten to follow up on because we'd kind of just flowed along in the conversation, but the low blow and whatnot and, you know, Virgil Hunter's defending of the low blow and all this sorts of stuff. I mean, Virgil Hunter's kind of weird enough as it is. There's been a lot of ink spilled about the special bond between trainer and fighter, you know, the father-son relationship, whether it's literal or figurative. And Virgil Hunter, you know, he falls into that conversation. And this is another one of those things where it's like, you know, I get it. But nonetheless, even in the pantheon of trainers, he's kind of a strange one. And he is a protective one, which is something I can appreciate. But don't, like, defend bullshit, though. You know what I mean? Like, if your fighter got hit in the leg and he's bowing out because he's kind of getting his ass kicked, like, you don't have to say that. You don't have to, like, throw him under the bus, but don't defend it. It's kind of lame. And the whole low blow thing, yeah, kind of unexpected from Amir Khan, to be honest, but you know, whatever. It's just, they move on. You know, where does Amir Khan move from here? I guess maybe a Kell Brook fight, but who knows?
Who knows? And I mean, I agree. I think Virgil Hunter, just gratuitously secretive. I'm still kind of stuck. Maybe it's my own prejudices, but the last time I hung out with him and Ward, there was the discussion of the looming, you know, Trump running for president, and his attitude was, if I get lower taxes, I don't give a shit about anything else. Like, why would I give a shit? And I was like, well, that's a very impressive position to take going into the election. God damn.
You're like a monk.
For all of the, you know, religious obsession, you know, and by extension, caring about others and, you know, the welfare of the downtrodden and all that. But boy, I can't think of a more one issue position than just whatever the taxes are. Who gives a fuck? Like, let the rest burn. You know, fuck everybody as long as I pay less. So I was like, okay. Interesting. Like, it was just a very revealing moment. And it was just an aside comment, but it's always stuck with me that just, like, he is an odd guy. And obviously he did extraordinarily well with the bond that he created with Ward in and out of the ring, like basically becoming a surrogate father. And I think he does care about his fighters, and he seems to be a decent person in many respects in terms of how he treats people. But boy, he is one of the most secretive people in boxing. I mean, I think most boxing people are just hemorrhaging who they are all the time, which is part of the charm of it. But, you know, he's somebody where I think even discussing, like, where you're going to go to dinner, he'd say, Dre, let's go in the back room. It was that kind of thing. Okay. Like, is everything a secret? Like, I mean, is what's going on here that important sort of thing? But maybe that's just the way he functions, and he's been successful. But anyway, that's my random aside.
No, I agree. He's a strange cat. And I mean, I appreciate what he brings, you know, to the game. And I'm not saying he's like some worthless dude or something. He's just weird. And, you know, it's just disappointing to hear somebody who's, you know, ostensibly considered an honest guy, a straight shooter or whatever, get behind what's clearly bullshit. That's all. And I mean, you know, kind of moving forward to also recent past, this past weekend, you know, we're just kind of leaping all around since it's been a little bit since we've had a show, but Juan Francisco Estrada wound up defeating Srisakit Sorungvisai in their rematch at the Forum in L.A. And, I mean, I thought that it was actually a fairly entertaining fight despite the moans and groans of a lot of people over the first half. I think if nothing else, they were maybe surprised that Sorungvisai was not as aggressive as they expected him. He also fought orthodox, which was unexpected, and clearly was not nearly as effective from an orthodox stance, I think the combination of the lack of aggression and the switching stances and just not being what people expected, you know, the combination of those things led to people being a little bit bewildered and a little bit disappointed. But I enjoyed it, and I also enjoyed seeing a guy like Estrada put it together and take advantage of the situation too. I thought it was a fun fight.
I did too. No, I've always been a big fan, and yeah, I think that division, there are some interesting fights to be made. Who do you want him to fight next?
That's a good question. I mean, if he were to move on and to try and unify, I think that, I mean, I always like the prospect of that, even though that sounds kind of counterintuitive in a way, where I say, yeah, I don't like the belts, they're worth shit, but I do like unification. That obviously is very counterintuitive, mm-hmm. But the fact is that as of right now, the belts are really, whether it's a lineal belt or an actual belt, the belts are really the only way we have to track these things. You know, we do honor the kind of lineal this guy beat this guy system more or less, but that's kind of a hardcore thing. And I that being said, you know, if he were to move on and fight Donnie Nietes or something like that, I would not at all complain. If he were to get his hands on Kazuto Ioka, you know, wouldn't complain. But I think that probably a rubber match with Sorungvisai is the it makes the most sense. I guess at least from the standpoint of, I mean, you kind of have to talk yourself into it in a way. You have to say something like, well, Sorungvisai just made the bad choice, but if he fights Southpaw in this third fight the entire way and he's more aggressive, then it'll be better. That's probably true. but it also is, you know, potentially a bit of a leap. That being said, you know, it's, I think since he is young enough, you know, the prospect of, he's only 29, the prospect of moving up in weight is not dead. You know, it's there, and he's not a teeny super flyweight. So anyway, there are a lot of possibilities, but I think that probably the most money is going to, at least for right now, come from a third fight with Sarungase.
You don't think Chocolatito could be in the mix in any meaningful way?
I don't know. That's, well, I don't know. I mean, for me, Chocolatito is definitely very, it's a shaky prospect. You know, he hasn't fought since September, and he already seemed to kind of get old overnight, or maybe get a little bit too small for the division overnight. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of wary about, you know, him coming into a fight and then just looking like absolute shit and getting sparked or something. That would obviously be no good. But if they were to set that fight up, I wouldn't kick that fight out of bed for eating crackers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What else? I mean, I guess we should turn to Canelo Jacobs. Are you excited about that fight this weekend?
Yeah. I kind of opened up saying, you know, started out, I was saying that I like the fight. I think that it's a fight that you can't really be mad at. It's two of the best fighters in the world fighting each other. I mean, you have obviously a better argument for Canelo being pound for pound than Daniel Jacobs, but still, it's at worst two of the best middleweights fighting one another, and that's great. And it's also not on pay-per-view, which is great. You don't have to pay $70 to watch it. But I think what I was kind of transitioning into saying when you had come on the show was just that this is the kind of fight where they're billing this as like, oh, this is some great fight. You know, this is one of Canelo's, you know, two fights over the year or whatever, like I was saying earlier. But this is also, again, taking a step back, a champion fighting a contender. Like, this is not, there's nothing really that special about that. That's just kind of the natural flow and order of what happens in boxing. So while I do like the fight, while I think that it has a lot of potential to be very fun and entertaining, from the standpoint of it being a big event, it's good. At the same time, it's a little frustrating to see these kinds of fights being, you know, have the red carpet being rolled out for them, because they are kind of regular fights in a way.
Yeah. No, I agree. It is another sort of contender fight. I mean, I have hope that Jacobs is able to put on a sort of spirited performance, and, you know, he at times can really surprise in what he's able to produce. And I don't feel like he's lived up to his full potential as a fighter either. You know, like this is an opportunity. I mean, a massive showcase against such a draw with Canelo that you hope that him getting up for a fight like this can produce something unexpected. But Canelo seems to be getting, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for the way that he's been improving as a fighter, and the fighters that he's been willing to face up to this point is, you know, very impressive, very dangerous. So even tough fights with very little upside, like there's Landy Lara, for example, a fight I didn't give him. I thought Lara won that by at least a couple of rounds, maybe more. But I really admire Canelo's willingness to sort of fight anybody. I mean, I'm wondering at this point, how much longer do you think we'll have Canelo in boxing? Do you think his heart is in it longer term?
That's a good question. And that's a question that not a lot of people are asking, I think. Especially because, you know, he's been in, he's only 28. And
yep.
That's young. But he's also been in boxing for almost 14 years now.
Absolutely.
You know, he's been fighting a long time. And it's not like he had just turned pro with no amateur career. Those years add up. And I was just talking about Chocolatito getting old overnight, and obviously I'm not making that call, not making that prediction. But it is a situation when you have a guy sparring that many rounds, training that much, training that long, training that often, I mean, it's like I got burned out on being a veterinary technician after 10 years, like burned out bad. And that was 10 years. And I can't even imagine doing, I can't imagine being that from the time I was 14 or 15 and then realizing at age like 26, 27, 28, like, God damn, dude, I've been doing the same thing this entire time. And on top of that, I've missed a lot and I've gotten my ass kicked a bunch of times. Like, I mean, you know, I'm just imagining that in the mind of a fighter, at some point it's going to kind of just be like, oh, dude, again. I don't know if Canelo's at that point, approaching that point, if that point already came. He seems like he's kind of having fun. He seems like he's more or less, you know, in it, at least for now. At the very least, it seems like he's a competitive person who wants to win and has drive to win and to do well. And that's important, but I don't know. I don't know how much longer he's going to be around. And I'm not sure if he were to suffer something like a really massive or awful knockout loss, how he would come back from that.
I think that's all true. And I think people don't appreciate the kind of grind that fighters are involved with. It's if you ever have the opportunity to spend, you know, even a day to see the kind of punishment they put their body under, and anybody under heavyweight is also doing it while they're hungry. You know, they have that added irritability that there's sort of no escape from it. There's no escape from the pressure of the looming fight, the way the rest of us could resort to having a drink or eating some sort of comfort food or having a cigarette. Fighters have to do it sober as a monk. And if you go longer term, just to see these guys get up at 5 a.m, I mean, it's just, it requires a kind of indentured servitude physically, and as I say, with a calorie deficit every day, that is, it's brutal to watch it. They're not happy doing it, but the payoff is extraordinary. But along the way, you know, the wheels fall off. You know, these guys are getting hit. They're, you know, firing punches that themselves, even when they're landing, is injuring joints. Like, it's a lot of wear and tear on the body for these guys. And as you say, with Canelo, I mean, 14 years as a pro in October, that's a lot to ask, you know, of how many thousands of rounds he's sparred. He's still, I mean, physically, he looks better than ever. I think he's still improving as a fighter, which must offer its own kind of satisfaction to somebody like him, being as competitive as he is. But yeah, one big loss can often really change the complexion of how these guys look at the rest of their career. And, you know, Chocolatito, I don't even think is 30 years old, and we're already saying he's kind of over the hill, given the way, you know, moved up in weight, and that body does not look designed to be at the weight class he is. Canelo, you know, he's one of those ones that I think there are definitely whispers about, given how his body looks at this weight class and the kind of power he's retained moving up. But, you know, I think, and obviously he's tested positive for tainted meat and all that. But,
yeah, those aren't unimportant, yeah.
They're not unimportant. And, you know, I as I say, I really admire the trajectory of his career. I think he stands as an exception to the general rule of how most fighters have steered their careers. I think he's creating a legacy that is very admirable. But I wonder, yeah, if he gets this next Golovkin fight and, you know, perhaps takes a bad loss. I don't think that he will. I think perhaps he could get his first definitive win against Golovkin if Golovkin is on the slide. Golovkin's a lot older. I just met Golovkin for the first time while he was in town to promote his next tune-up fight against the fellow Canadian, which was a really weird affair, very odd. But yeah, I hope Canelo has at least a few more very impressive fights left in him that he wants to take on. I don't think the Jacobs fight is going to do especially well in terms of audience, but I mean, if I mean, I don't know if you agree, but I mean, I think he is the face of the sport far more than even Joshua is at this point. And I think he's earned that with the legacy, as much as he sort of just had this kind of magnetism and charisma that drew such a huge audience. I mean, he's really, I think, outdone what expectations there were for him with his career. And yeah, he's only 28, even though he's been here for 14 years.
I think that this kind of, it's a great segue into, you know, still talking about Canelo Jacobs, but also kind of talking about DAZN and the evolution of boxing through apps and streaming and stuff like that. And I think that it's great overall that boxing is starting to catch up and starting to recognize that it has to get with the technology and has to get with the times, as it were. It has to evolve. You know, for a number of years, a number of bigger magazine editors, you know, specifically of The Ring, were saying, no, you know, we're not going online. We're keeping the paper, we're keeping the magazine. And I mean, that's just one example. It's not representative of boxing as a whole, but I mean, it is kind of a microcosm. And you saw a number of these things, sales of these things plummet, and a lot of, you know, alongside boxing, just kind of the popularity drop as boxing dug its heels in and was like, no, we're not doing streaming and we're not doing all this other shit because we already have a good model and this is the way we're doing it. And then everything else, you know, sped up while boxing was still back there. It's great that it's finally catching up, and that's a good thing. But I think that also what has wound up happening is that it's gotten a little overzealous. It's overreached a little bit. And Canelo Alvarez getting something like $360 fucking million dollars. Just look at what, I mean, guys, you know, Rocky Fielding and then we have Daniel Jacobs. The Daniel Jacobs fight is good. Don't get me wrong, again. But at the end of the day, this is a business, and the people who put money into this are thinking, is the money coming back at some point? Is Canelo Jacobs a good enough fight that it's going to produce the numbers that people will be saying, yeah, that $360 million was a great investment, on top of the investment into Anthony Joshua and Gennady Golovkin and the other fights and fight cards that they're investing into? You know, where is this money actually going to? Where is it coming from? These are valid questions. It doesn't make you a hater to ask these questions, and it doesn't make you an asshole to ask these questions. These are the kind of questions that we need to ask, quite frankly, if these things are going to be successful and we're going to be worrying about not getting fucking grifted. It's important. So to answer your question a little bit more directly, I think that Canelo Jacobs will probably do well. Canelo's still easily one of the if he's not the most popular fighter in the sport, he's one of the two, maybe three most popular fighters in the sport. You know, Anthony Joshua is obviously, it's obviously very tough to argue against that. But anyway, what does that mean though? What does being the most popular fighter in the sport even mean? And that is the overall question. And I guess that's what we're going to get some answers for. We got a partial answer before with the Rocky Fielding fight, and the answer was it doesn't mean that much because we didn't get the signups for DAZN that we thought we were going to get. And damn, we're feeling kind of strained about that $360 million now because holy shit, how are we getting that investment back? Well, so I mean, that's. These are all, like I said, they're valid questions. Canelo Jacobs, I think, will do well. Is it going to sign up a lot of people for DAZN long-term? No. No, it's not. Daniel Jacobs is slightly compelling, and that's about it. Unfortunately, and again, I have to say this fucking every time I talk about Daniel Jacobs, I have to, you know, preface what I'm about to say with, I'm not shit-talking cancer survivors. I swear to you, I'm not. But this storyline, and I don't want to dismiss it as a storyline because I know it's his life And I know that he survived cancer, and that's important and great, and I applaud him, and it's inspirational. However, hearing that every single time you hear his name is tiresome.
It becomes like Rudy Giuliani with 9/11.
It's a trope.
It becomes a trope. I agree, and I think that that's common knowledge amongst not just reporters, but also people who work at these networks promoting the fighters. Is everybody loves Danny Jacobs, everybody admires what he's done, but there's something about that story that just feels a little tired every time he brings it up. No matter how important a story everybody acknowledges it to be, every family has somebody touched with cancer. It's a terribly tragic issue that colors the lives of everybody in some way, shape, or form. Maybe your parents or your kids or whatever, or more indirectly. But I mean, it's immensely powerful what he's done overcome that. But it's just not I don't know. There's something not compelling about hearing. It degrades its potency in some way with how they seem to use it. And I'm not sure. There are just some characters out there where I immensely admire Clarissa Shields, but there's something about, I went to her last press conference where it's just, there's something about this that is dull, and it shouldn't be dull because she's a great character and she's accomplished a lot, but there's just something where you're just not compelled by hearing the same thing again and again and again. And she even moves in this direction of, you all doubted me. You all said that I couldn't beat this person or that person. And I was like, who the fuck doubted you? Everybody's giving you props. You're getting national coverage. Like it's really not on journalism not giving you attention or not respecting you or not giving you your due for being a two-time Olympic champion and on and on and on. It's just, you don't sell fucking tickets. I don't think it's just sexism. It's just, there's something about you that doesn't, beyond the initial learning about you, it's a bit one note. And I don't know how cancer can become one note, or her Shields' journey into boxing and all of that, but like when you compare it to Ronda Rousey, which I every time you hear people talk about her, that's all they want to talk about. Rousey, there was something a little more compelling, I think, about the substance of what she was doing in terms of just knocking everybody out and all of that. That's not Clarissa Shields' style. And I'm sorry, but like, knockouts are sexy in a way that decision victory, even majority decision, unanimous decision, it's not. It's just not. It's not as compelling to your average fan. I don't know how you can argue them into thinking that it is. And I don't know why Danny Jacobs, who everybody I've ever spoken to who's covered him, loves him, especially people who know him well, which I do not, love him. But there's something, when I'm watching him fight, I like him as a fighter too, where I'm just like, why isn't he more popular? Because it seems like this story should catapult like fucking anybody, and it doesn't seem like it has yet. And he's had all this shoulder programming and little documentaries and stuff by talented people, and it just doesn't seem to go over. And I'm not sure why.
Well, I think that the other part you were talking about is pretty important, in that he's not super compelling as a fighter. On top of him not being super compelling as a fighter, he's widely inconsistent. I mean, if you're getting decked by Sergio Mora, even if it's a kind of a balance shot as you're going in for the kill because you just knocked him down, that doesn't bode well overall. Especially when the criticism, before that was getting knocked out by Dmitry Pirog, and so the criticism or the doubting came in the form of doubting his chin, and then he gets knocked down by a guy like Sergio Mora who can't crack at all, and it's disconcerting. But the inconsistency is really what we're talking about, I think, where you have him stepping in and annihilating a guy like Peter Quillen, who was seen as kind of a looming threat or whatever in the middleweight division. Even if he had largely kind of been kept away from the action for a few years, but he annihilated him. But then he's kind of, having a difficult time here and there with other guys that he probably shouldn't be having a difficult time with. you know, getting split decisions, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, I don't know how compelling he is as a fighter. And so what it feels like to me, and again, kind of have to like, you know, put the cross up here. It feels like to me that since he is not particularly compelling as a fighter, they kind of have to go to the well with this cancer story. God, that sounds so bad the way that I say it. I'm sorry. But they kind of have to, they have to reach and grab this story because that's what they got. Because he's not knocking out anybody of note apart from Peter Quillen. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, it's a likable guy.
You know,
like him too. It's just, it feels like they're really trying. They're like, oh, well, if you don't like him as a fighter, then you got to like him because he's a cancer survivor. And if you don't like him because he's a cancer survivor, because you're hearing the story, then God, you're a fucking asshole. Look, I'm not going to argue with that. I am an asshole, but I don't want to really hear it anymore.
No, I mean, it feels like a cue. It feels like a laugh track, like a flashing sign of how you're supposed to respond to something. And it's because people just don't respond to it. Like, as I say, we all had our initial reaction to it where you do what they, you know, it's paint by numbers. Like, of course we respond to him overcoming this and winning a title, and it's inspiring. Great. But there's an aspect to, you know, any good story has a number of, like, after you've told the one thing, people are wondering in their mind, and what's next? And it doesn't seem like there's been the second or even the first and after you learn what his story is. And I don't know why. I don't know why you're like, okay, I get it. And then they treat you as if you've never heard the story before with a different documentary. You know, it's like fucking HBO leaving boxing to focus their attention on a brand new Muhammad Ali biography, like documentary. really? Well, they're underserved specimen from boxing. There's somebody where I'm desperate to hear something that I haven't heard in the 5,000 fucking documentaries. Like, what great ingenuity they have there, that this is putting their creativity on display to show you another 90-minute documentary jerking off to the legacy of Muhammad Ali, you know, secular saint and all that. Like, it's just so like, ugh. And I feel like they've tried to do it with Danny Jacobs, who's a nice guy, but I don't think that that's a personality that really surprises people in any meaningful way. There's just something one note about it where you're like, he's a really good guy. And there's nothing after it. So I, you know, some of these guys are like that.
Well, and it's in this day and age, a good fight being a good fight is not enough to sell it. And I mean, it's not enough to sell it beyond the hardcores. And ultimately, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about making money, when we're talking about creating subscriptions. And I think that the hope was that if, you know, HBO was getting out of the boxing business, then hopefully these people who were going to be leaving HBO because, I mean, like me, I had HBO because of boxing. Beyond that, I mean, they have great original programming, but there are ways around these things. And for the most part, I just wanted to watch boxing live in high def. That's beyond that. It's, you know, I didn't really care. And there's anyway. So I think that people at DAZN, people who were behind this whole deal, were hoping, all right, well, if these people who got into HBO monthly because they were buying the boxing more or less, you know, now that they can just pivot and here's Canelo, oh, well, he was an HBO staple and now he's on DAZN. So you just get, you know, pretty much the same price, just get DAZN. And I think that the idea made sense, but that they didn't really think it through and they didn't really consider that people might not just jump ship and they might be suspicious of a new platform that they, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't pan out the way they wanted it to. So, I don't know. I think that this fight is good. I'm going to probably enjoy it, but it's not going to be a game changer.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I think if Canelo puts on a great performance, then, you know, everybody And Golovkin gets by. I mean, hopefully he's able to put on a performance that's more commensurate with what's garnered the kind of excitement he achieved earlier on with a lot of fights in New York City. But I mean, fuck, if either of these guys stumble and they fuck up the rubber match, I mean, I think that's the big issue in the heavyweight division also, is that all of these three guys have displayed vulnerabilities that could be exploited in these quote unquote, you know, marination fights where you lose an opportunity for something that's a really big deal. I'm not sure that Golovkin and Canelo should have had these other fights, and maybe they get by and it's okay, but Golovkin has looked like the wheels have fallen off a little bit, as they should, like at his age. But you know, Canelo should do okay here, but I mean, what if he doesn't? What if there's some kind of upset to a fight like this? You know, Jacobs puts on some spectacular performance. I don't see it happening, but I just wish boxing had a little more fidelity to sort of creating the fights that people want to see when they're right there to be made. And this fucking marination obsession of promoters.
God, it's so dumb. You know, especially in a landscape like today's, where, you know, twice a year you're going to marinate. Come on, dude. It doesn't really make much sense, especially not, you know, when the time is right and you don't really get a whole lot of chances like that in boxing, in today's sport of boxing, you know. But what's your ultimate prediction for Canelo Jacobs? What do you think is going to happen?
I think the most likely scenario is Canelo to win a lopsided decision. I'm hoping that Canelo is able to step it up a little more and actually take some risks to go for a knockout against Jacobs. I just think Canelo is too much for Jacobs at this point. And I agree with you about his inconsistency. I was there for that fight against Kachaka II, and that, I mean, it was shocking. It was just shocking because Chocolate seemed to be a very durable, dangerous fighter, even though you could argue about his resume. But boy, Jacobs just went for that in a way that was so surprising. And, you know, he's got a lot of talent, but I think you're right. I don't think he's ever really found a way to showcase it, to really put his foot on the pedal in a way that would give him the kind of results that I think would allow for a fan base to really come on board for him the way I think, you know, his supporters have hoped. And certainly the people bankrolling him saw him as the kind of golden goose, given the, you know, the most lucrative backstory in the history of sports is Lance Armstrong as a cancer survivor overcoming it. Here you have it where, as far as we know, it's totally illegitimate. Like, there's no asterisk beside it, and yet it just didn't catch fire. Like Lance's did, you know, we're making hundreds of millions of dollars for a sport that Americans don't even give a fuck about. You know, they don't know anybody competing in. And so, yeah, I think Canelo lopsided decision. If he puts on a special performance, a knockout, I just think Jacobs could be overwhelmed here. That's my sense of it. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it will probably be a decision for Canelo. I think that Daniel Jacobs has proven to be explosive enough offensively that Canelo probably is going to be careful. And Daniel Jacobs he doesn't like getting hit. He tends to freeze up a little bit when he gets hit. And he tends to be a little bit more styly than a Golovkin. And so I think that he can tend to be maybe a little more unpredictable than a Golovkin, at least from Canelo's perspective. Anyway, I don't want to overanalyze it, but I don't think Daniel Jacobs is going to be winning a decision against Golovkin or against Canelo for obvious reasons. And Canelo has already shown that he has a world-class beard. So I just don't think it's in the cards for Daniel Jacobs unless he delivers some sort of, you know, mystical performance that's, you know, fantastic. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but you kind of alluded to that, you know, a couple minutes ago when you were talking. I think that that would be something that would be really good for boxing overall, actually. I don't want to see Canelo lose. I'm not trying to say that I want to see one of the most popular fighters get totally upended, but those kinds of things are good. That kind of shaking up of the sport is good every so often, just to kind of remind you that this shit is not predictable, that things can happen that are crazy, and that, you know, this is truly fucking greatest sport of all time. But my money would be on Canelo by decision, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I think it's a fun fight to watch. I'm looking forward to it. Right after the Kentucky Derby, no less. So that's kind of interesting as well.
Hey, actually, I have to ask my 20-month-old. Hey, do you think Canelo's going to win? Do you think Canelo's going to win? No. Okay.
That was a no.
Well, she's giving me the no answer, so I think that could be a no. I don't know. She's pretty wise, though. She might only be 20 months, but she's wise.
Mm. All right. Well,
in any event, you know, like I said earlier, I'm happy that this is not a pay-per-view. I'm happy that they're not overreaching in that regard, but it's also not the greatest fight card from top to bottom, if we're being honest and we're, you know, even taking a even somewhat discerning eye to it. So there's that.
Yeah, well, shocker there. You know, some of these fucking undercards lately, going to the live events, like, it's, ugh.
Yeah, I guess that's just not really something you can count on overall as a top-to-bottom decent card these days.
Not anymore. No, I think, like, it's becoming much more common that, I don't want to shit all over it, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, at least you could, provide a couple of high-quality, you know, fights on the card. At the very least, I guess we get to see if Mauricio Herrera is totally shot, but that's not enough.
Or bring Michael Grant back to fight Henry Akinwande.
I've always dreamed of that happening. That's been my dream. If they can actually get our good friend Bobby on the card, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Why not bring Bobby Chez in there to fight Ken Shamrock? You know, it can be whatever styles they want to use. Go for it. But they have to do it well above the, you know, the legal limit of intoxication behind the wheel.
Actually, I was gonna stipulate in the contract that they both have to get a DUI on the way to the venue.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Now, that's exciting. But, I mean, we're talking about innovation here in terms of promoting a fight in a way that could raise awareness for DUI. And, I mean, even if they kill somebody on the way over, the greater good in terms of bringing down the number of drink drivers, that person could be seen as a hero. We could have a statue of the person who Bobby kills on the way over. And, okay, we need to stop doing this because our sense of humor is probably not shared by about 80 to 90% of our audience.
Right, and I was just about to say maybe they could put one of those little things you blow into in your car in the corner between rounds, and they have to blow over a certain amount to actually come out to fight. But, you know, that's just – it's spitballing.
Yeah, I mean, even Takate could come up with a new advertising campaign. You know, drink responsibly unless you're Bobby Chez, in which case just do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, it's solid.
Or could it be brought to you by Mensa? You've wondered what the fuck we do other than try to become members of Mensa. Now you know.
Be bolder, Islay.
Yeah, go for it, Bobby. Go for it, Bobby.
Oh, Bobby, we'll be contacting you. In any event, if you stuck with us through that, I don't know if we're really that sorry. We'll do it again. But regardless, we appreciate you. We're going to get going, though. And hopefully everybody has a good time watching the fights this weekend on DAZN. But again, we do appreciate you listening in. Bryn, always a pleasure. We'll have to do it again soon.
You got it. This was fun. This was fun. Take care, everybody.
All right, everybody. If you would, please follow us on Twitter. Follow Bryn at Brynicio, B-R-I-N-I-C-I-O, and follow me at Patrick M. Connor. Also, if you're on Facebook, like the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page on Facebook. And if you would, please, if you listen to us on iTunes, go into iTunes, throw us a rating on there. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Take it easy.